What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and thanks for tuning in. Hope all is well with you guys out there. It is all good over here. Just glad to be back on the mic recording another episode to talk about Florida State with you guys. And I think that I have an episode you guys are going to enjoy. We're going to talk about Florida State's offense in 2023, why it should be better, how that's going to happen, and what that could translate to on the field. Fair warning, we might nerd out for just a minute on some stats, but we'll try and keep it light and just kind of roll through the numbers. But I think you're going to find them interesting. So it, you know, it won't be too bad. I know sometimes it gets boring droning on with, you know, with stats and numbers and everything, but, you know, we'll keep it light, keep it fun, so it won't be too bad. But before we get into that, we would be remiss if we didn't stop and give a shout out and send our best wishes to the Florida State softball team. Now, game one may be in the books by the time you listen to this. We're only a couple hours away at the time of recording from the series kicking off. But with that being said, Florida State softball is in the national championship series against Oklahoma. After going back, they run-ruled Oklahoma State. Then they beat a very good Washington team and then eliminated Tennessee to get there. They are 3-0 in the tournament so far, playing well. They had some mistakes here and there, but you know they did not dip down to the loser's bracket at all. They have managed to stay in the winner's bracket, and they've done well. And so this is going to be an exciting series. It's going to be tough. I mean, Oklahoma, without a doubt, is an absolute juggernaut of a program. 6 national titles, 4 consecutive appearances. I mean, their record is only 58-1 this year. That's not too shabby. They're on a 51-game win streak, so it's going to be tough. It's going to be a tall task for Florida State to not only beat a team like Oklahoma, but do it in their backyard. They are playing in Oklahoma City. You know, the crowd's probably going to be predominantly Oklahoma fans. But I do feel like Florida State should have some decent representation there. I know it's a long drive, but you know, the people really support and appreciate this team, and it is well deserved. So I do think they'll have a little chunk of the crowd there. But it's going to be tough. But you know, I mean, when you look at Florida State, they have accomplished a lot too. I mean, they're 33-2 in their last 35 games. They're on a 24-game win streak. You have Catherine Sandercock in the circle. You have a productive offense that's put up 16 runs in the 3 tournament games you've played so far. And they've been to this stage before. They faced off against Oklahoma before. And, you know, really, when you think about it, when you see a team with a record like 58-1, and I understand when they, in the series before, it was 2 years ago, but Florida State won the first game in that series. Now, unfortunately, they dropped that series 2-1, and Oklahoma went on to win their 5th national title. But, I mean, you beat them. So, like, you went head-to-head under the lights on the big stage, and you beat Oklahoma one of the games in 2021. So, you know, you've been there, you've done that, you face a team like this, and you can roll in with the confidence that you can compete with this team. And if there's any team that probably would be able to knock Oklahoma off, my money would be on Florida State. You know, they have good offense, good defense, and, you know, obviously Lonnie Alameda is a excellent coach. So they're going to be prepared. They're going to be ready. They're not going to, you know, fold up from the moment or anything like shy away from the moment or anything like that. I'm excited to see how this goes. I know they're going to be ready. I know they're going to be revenge-minded from 2021. You know, it's not going to be easy, but I feel like that they will definitely compete and hopefully be able to bring a national championship back home to Tallahassee. And again, it just speaks to the continue of their run of success and why this team and this program should be celebrated. You know, sometimes I know people don't like when podcasts and things like that talk about non-football sports, but they deserve their moment in the sunshine. Because if you were to compare this to, say, football, and let's imagine, will you, that the 12-team playoff is already in place. If Florida State football had won a national title in 2018, made the championship series, you know, the national title game in 2021 and is now back in it in 2023, we'd be head over heels with that. So they deserve to get our praise, and I just want to take a minute to give them a shout out and send them the best of luck. And with that being said, we'll touch on another round ball sport real quick. Baseball, we know they had a rough first year under Link Jarrett, missed the postseason for the first time since 1977. They dealt with injuries, lack of experience, and lack of depth. But just like when Norvell arrived with this football program, you needed to infuse the roster with some talent. So far, they went out and added 5 players from the portal, including an Alabama transfer that was a top 100 player out of high school, played in 18 games his freshman year, a North Florida transfer who was first-team all-conference, in the A-Sun. They added three UCF transfers, including two pitchers, one of which made the all-ACC freshman team. So, you know, they're rebuilding the roster, and it's going to be a process. It's going to take a little bit of time. Link Jarrett's still a good coach, even though they had a bad year. But this is how you go about fixing that, and that's getting talent, you know, through recruiting and through the portal now. It does change things and speeds up how quickly you can flip a roster, which is something we saw with football. And speaking of, we're going to transition into football now, talking about Florida State's offense in 2023. Now, we know Florida State's offense last year in 2022 was much improved. They added the necessary talent to run a traditional Norvell-style offense, and the production followed. Most of you have heard me talk about this in the past, but when you look at Norvell's career average as a production-wise, as a offensive coordinator or head coach, basically when he's calling the shots, averaging over his career, which was 8 years in that position, they have put up around 6,433 yards and 62 touchdowns. In 2022, Florida State put up 6,295 total yards and 62 touchdowns. So again, you are in lockstep with what he normally gets out of his offense. And, you know, it was one of the best offenses in the country last year. You know, taking some a look at some numbers here, in total offense, Florida State finished 10th with 484 yards per game on average. Scoring offense dipped a little bit to tied for 16th at 36.1 points per game. We know a lot of that had to do with the field goal kicking. They ranked 7th in yards per play at 6.96, and only 5 teams, to put that into perspective, had over 7 yards per play. 2 of them made the playoffs. So up next, you have the explosive plays. Florida State was 3rd overall at the end of the season. That's plays of 20-plus yards. And when you look at the second-ranked team, who's Western Kentucky, they played one additional game, and the number one team, who was Georgia, played 2 additional games. So I would like to think that if Florida State had an additional game or two, they probably would have finished 1st overall in explosive plays. But when you just look at the grand scheme of things, what that tells you is Florida State's offense was one of the best in the country. Now, they weren't perfect. So we know that they were held scoreless for over 2 quarters against Wake Forest, who did not have a good defense. They were 88th in total defense last season. You were shut out for 3 quarters against NC State. Now, granted, they were a top 20 defense at home at night in a big game for them. You couldn't managed to get 3 points to win that game when you needed it most. Now, I know a lot of that was you didn't trust your field goal kicker, but that's the thing. Like, you were held under 400 yards in both of those games, that which they lost. You were held under 400 yards against LSU, and you only won by 1 point. So you can see how when Florida State's offense doesn't put up a ton of production, those games get pretty close. They get down to the wire. Now, of course, no one expects Florida State to go out and score 40 points and put up 500 yards on every single defense they face. There's good defenses out there. That's just football. You're not going to have a good day at the office every single day. But you get, you know, you can see what I'm getting at here. So, again, we have to mention that they were hurt by the field goal kicking last year. They missed 8 field goals and a PAT. They were 121st out of 131 teams in kicking. And while no one is expected to be perfect, I mean, you just gave away an average of 1.9 points per game, which would have put you at 38 points per game and bumped you up 5 spots in your scoring offense from 16th to 11th. So you can see the difference that it makes when you have a kicking game that, one, alters your game plan, and two, you can't rely on, and you missed a lot of points. And hopefully that gets corrected in 2023, because one of the areas they have to improve the most is in the red zone, which, again, a lot of that leads back to your kicking issues. So how does it get better, and what does that translate to as far as success on the field? So how we're going to approach this is we're going to talk about the added production from the portal that Florida State has brought in. And how we're going to do that is points versus replacement. So how many points do we expect from the new faces versus the faces that they're taking their spot, essentially? So what we're going to, and the thing is with Florida State, and you guys should know by now that I don't come on here to trash Florida State players. I try to avoid that. You know, everybody's out there giving it their all. I'm not going to talk bad about them. But the truth is, Florida State is churning the roster like we talked about. They had to bring in those high-end pieces, and a lot of the guys they had were average college football players, and now you're getting more high-end pieces, and that's what we're going to talk about, how that could possibly, because none of this is guaranteed. This is not an exact science, but you know, when you look at the numbers, and this is kind of how I projected that Jordan Travis, I thought he was going to have a breakout season last year. He could possibly have had one, and he did, when you just followed the numbers. So looking at, it'll make sense here in a second. So when you look at the tight end position, starting with Jaheim Bell, who's replacing Cam McDonald. Now, Jaheim Bell, we know, and I really like to always count on proven production. This is why we're talking about Jaheim Bell and not necessarily Kyle Morlock. Morlock was productive, but it was at the D2 level. You have a host of transfers here, a handful of impact players that are proven at the Power 5 level, which is something that, to me, you can kind of take that to the bank. So when you look at Jaheim Bell, 2 years in the SEC of experience, significant playing time. Over those 2 years, he averaged around 41 yards per game, and he also, in 2022, contributed for around 2.67 points per game on average for South Carolina. Cam McDonald for Florida State in 2022, he contributed to an average of 0.46 points per game, so less than half a point per game on average is what he added. And 24 yards per game was what he averaged. So when you look at what Jaheim Bell is going to bring versus his replacement, that's adding 2.21 points per game and 17 yards. Now, moving down to receiver, you have Keon Coleman. Again, a guy who comes in from Michigan State, proven at the Power 5 level, had a breakout season last year against some relatively tough defenses, and we'll get into that in a minute. But he produced in 2022 an average of 3.5 points per game and 66.5 yards per game. So Pokey Wilson, who had a good season. Now, he had a breakout year, and I was really happy to see that for him in his final year at Florida State. Keon Coleman's essentially going to replace what you had in Pokey Wilson. He produced an average of 1.85 points per game and 41.3 yards per game. So when you look at the receiver position right now, you're adding 1.65 points per game and 25.2 yards per game. Now, this last comparison may be a little, you have to take it with a little bit of salt because we're going to have to reach back to 2021. But obviously, we know Micah Pittman has transferred to Utah, and we more than likely expect Winston Wright to get the majority of snaps in his position. We know there's other players that are going to contribute, but let's just say Winston Wright is back, is healthy, is full go, and can produce at the level he did in 2021 when he was at West Virginia. So again, you have a guy who produced proven production at the Power 5 level. Micah Pittman, we know, was a good teammate. He was a guy you could really likable player, you know, an excellent blocker, tough physical player, but he wasn't huge on production. So he averaged around 1.38 points per game and 28.1 yards per game. Winston Wright in 2021 attributed for 2.8 points per game for West Virginia and 53.1 yards per game, which is plus 1.42 points and 25 yards per game. So when you add all that up, just from three players alone, Pittman, Wilson, McDonald going out, and Bell, Coleman, and Wright coming in, you are adding 5.28 points per game and 67.2 yards. Now, like I said, again, you can't guarantee that those numbers are going to happen. But you also would expect that they're going to have better players around them to help them produce. They're going to probably have better quarterback play than what Keon Coleman got, than what Winston Wright got. I don't even know who the quarterback was in 2021 for West Virginia. You know, probably better than what Jaheim Bell got with Spencer Rattler at South Carolina. So when you look at them, if they can equal that production and not gain a single yard or point more than that, you're still adding 5.25 points a game and almost 70 yards. Now, but what does that mean? So when you look at the playoff teams in 2022, their average points per game was 41.1 with an average yards per game of 476. Now, Georgia, who won the national championship, averaged 501 yards per game. And, you know, you don't really think about Georgia and offense. You think about their defense. But more and more in the modern era of college football, a lot of times you really need that high-powered offense to be able to go out and compete at a high level, make the playoffs, and potentially win a national championship. And, I mean, if you compare what Georgia has on offense and defense, no wonder they won like they did. And Florida State's defense is still pretty good. But if they can, and I expect them to be better in 2023, but if you can get that offense up there, then, you know, you'll be able to win those shootout games. And so looking at what that translates to, so Florida State, if you add those numbers to what they did last year, so that would put them at 41.4 points per game. Now, remember what I just said, with all the playoff teams in 2022 averaging 41.1 points per game. If you add the yardage, you would put Florida State averaging around 551 yards per game. So you would have been the number one offense in yards per game, and you would have been tied for third with Southern Cal in points per game. So you can see just by adding those three players alone with your points and yards above replacement, Florida State could potentially have the number one to number three offense in the country. And that's huge. You know, you would go from 16th in scoring offense up to third and 10th up to first in yards per game. And, you know, what that tells us is Florida State does have the potential to have legit the best offense in the country, if not at least top three. And that's good enough to get you as far as you want to go, as long as your defense shows up to play. Now, of course, there's little things like turnover luck and, you know, when and how you score and things like that. But, you know, that's really good, significant, solid production. Now, when you look at Keon Coleman, I know a lot of people said that he had terrible quarterback play at Michigan State. And he did have significant production. It wasn't the greatest quarterback play, but maybe not as bad as some people make it out to be. I do like to point out that there was also another playmaker at wide receiver on that team, so it's not like he was a one-man show who got all the touches, which attributed to his production. So you would think he will be used to working in a system and having another dominant wide receiver like Johnny Wilson. But when you look at the quarterback at Michigan State, Peyton Thorne, who threw to Coleman last year, now he's since hit the portal, but his completion percentage was 62.5. Jordan Travis was 64. He threw for 2,679 yards. Jordan Travis threw for a little over 3,200. Jordan's QBR was at 85.8. Thorne's was at 69.8. PFF grade, Thorne was 70.7. Jordan Travis was 90.1. So you feel like you're going to get better quarterback play at Florida State than what he got at Michigan State, which should help elevate his skill set. Now, to be fair, Michigan State did play against three top 25 pass defenses last season and eight in the top 50. Florida State played against two, counting Louisville. I know he didn't really play that much against Louisville, but he was shredding them while he was in there before he got injured, and they played five in the top 50. So they played some tough defenses at Michigan State, and so I will give them credit for that. But you do expect like you're going to have better quarterback play in 2023 than what he got in 2022. So that should help Coleman out as well. Now, speaking of Jordan Travis and why the offense should get better more than just adding a couple of really good players, I think one thing that gets underappreciated or maybe under-talked about, because everyone talks about how Florida State returns the most production, but when you look at 2022 and where Florida State was at, they had a lot of really experienced guys who were learning in a trial-by-fire environment. Take Jordan Travis, for example. When you look back at 2022, he had 350 passing attempts coming into that season. He had 353 in 2022, so he literally doubled his experience last year. He played against Clemson. He played against LSU. He played against Florida. He played against Miami. He was the starter in all these big games. So now you have the experience in these situations. You have a full year as a starter. You have the confidence that you can perform at a high level. You know, there was a lot of doubts about whether he could throw the ball or not. He has another year of development. So these are the things that I think don't really get talked about a whole lot about how Florida State's offense took off last year, considering it was really kind of a new group of inexperienced guys. So, like I said, when you talk about Jordan Travis, his entire career he had thrown for 22 touchdowns. Last year he threw for 24. So again, you just see the development and the experience that he has that is going to be huge for them going forward, especially the most important position on the field. And you know, we got some other guys to get to as well. He also ran the ball considerably less last year than he normally did, but still put up higher yards per carry and a equivalent level of touchdowns to what he has in the past. So he's potentially even a more efficient runner who is more willing and confident in relying on his arm now. So continuing down the line, you have Johnny Wilson, which is kind of the same story. When you look at where he was coming into last season, he only had 18 catches for 237 yards and one touchdown prior to 2022. Last season, he had 43 catches, 897 yards, and five touchdowns. So, I mean, this is a guy who's got more experience, more development, and we know he had some issues to clean up because he was inexperienced. We knew he was kind of a raw talent coming in last year. He even said himself he didn't know that anyone was even going to reach out to him when he entered the portal. So we've heard he's gotten better at some things as far as the drops go. You got another year in this offense. Your timing with Jordan Travis is going to be better. and he has more talented weapons around him to, you know, take some of the coverage off of him. Because, I mean, you can double Johnny Wilson if you want. It's still probably not fair. He's a 6'7" athletic freak mismatch that's almost impossible to cover. But you could, you know, if you were going to double him now, okay, what are you going to do? Leave Keon Coleman uncovered? You're going to leave Jaheim Bell uncovered? You're going to, you know what I mean? Like, you got to pick your poison with this offense. You have so many talented weapons that it's going to help open everybody up. And so, in theory, that should make for a better season for Johnny Wilson in 2023. And we haven't even got to the rest of the receiving core yet. You have Kentron Portier, who now has more experience and looked dominant in the spring. You have Ja'Kai Douglas, who was injured for part of last year, who should be back healthy now. Deuce Spann, who was brand new to even playing the position after transitioning from quarterback, he's got another year of development. Markeeston Douglas had a solid year last year, getting some experience, really came on late in the season. And like we said, that doesn't even account for Kyle Morlock. Now, granted, his production was at Division II level, so we'll have to wait and see how that translates over to Power 5. But he was a, I mean, he's still a 6'7" mismatch who has produced in college football. So that's another guy to look out for. And, I mean, guys, let's be honest. From some of the pictures, looking at Destin Hill, he looks in the type of shape. And I know physical condition is different than being, you know, back in football shape. But this is a guy that I'm looking at to contribute this year. I think that it's going to be like we talked about with Deuce Spann last year. I think he's just such a talented athlete. And that level of speed that he has, you want to find ways. You have to find ways to get the ball in his hands. So I think Destin Hill could be a guy that can contribute. And we still haven't even mentioned the probably king of the spring, Vandravius Jacobs, as well as five-star wide receiver Hakeem Williams, who did come on a little bit slow. But, you know, throughout the course of the season, he could develop and certainly contribute. Moving back to running back, I know you lose Trayshawn Ward, who had a lot of experience, but Trey Benson, who looks to step into the RB1 position, he only had 6 carries for 22 yards and a touchdown prior to 2022 because of an injury. Last year, he had 154 carries, 994 yards, and 9 touchdowns. I mean, this is a guy who was almost Florida State's first 1,000-yard rusher since Cam Akers in, realistically, his first season, first full season as a Power 5 running back. So he even admitted there were some things that he had to get better at. That's why he came back. So I expect him to take another step forward next year. I hope he does crack the 1,000-yard mark. You know, he'll be the more of the lead back this year. And there's some other guys, of course, that are going to get playing time. Speaking of, you have Toa Fili, who I count more as an all-purpose back because he does a lot of receiving work out of the backfield. So again, same story with him. When you look at his 2022 all-purpose stats, he had 118 touches, 722 yards, and 6 touchdowns. Prior 2 years, he had 91 total touches, 655 total yards, and 5 touchdowns. So, you have a guy who has gained a significant amount of experience compared to what he had previously. And while it was in a more limited capacity, you also had Rodney Hill as a freshman got some quality carries. You also had CJ Campbell get some experience. You have Keziah Holmes coming in, who's a guy who has a limited amount of snaps at Penn State, but still he's been in Power 5, so you have that experience now. When you look up front at the offensive line, of course, unfortunately, you do lose Dylan Gibbons, who is an experienced starter for you, but when you look at the 8 guys who I expect to be significant contributors, this doesn't count a lot of the young guys who, you know, may play in garbage time or something like that. These are 8 of the guys that I expect to be either starters or significant contributors. Granted, all this wasn't at Florida State, but still, a lot of it outside of Jeremiah Byers was all Power 5 experience. Last year, that core group of 8 guys gained 4,743 snaps. They also gained a combined 70 starts in 2022. So, you know, and Jeremiah Byers, like I said, it wasn't Power 5, but, I mean, this is one of the offensive line I'm most excited about. He was at UTEP, but he was an all-conference player. And now you have a group that is a pretty experienced offensive line and a lot of Power 5 experience at that. And so that's going to pay, again, that's going to all of this snowballs to paying dividends going forward. This is how you build that elite offense. You up your talent level. You add the playmakers necessary. You get the experience. You bring that back. And that's why Florida State's offense should take a huge step forward. And that's not even mentioning that now this is the second year under Norvell and Atkins working together. I mean, everybody knows how it is. When you're a new working relationship, there's going to be some things you got to iron out, you got to hammer out. And now that you're in year 2, you know, your play caller and your offensive coordinator should be more gelled, more on the same page. You know, there's not going to be as much guesswork. So you also don't play two of the top 25 defenses you played in 2022. No NC State this year. No Louisville this year. You do add Pitt, who was a top 25 defense last year. Virginia Tech was a little better than Georgia Tech. Louisiana's defense was slightly better than Southern Miss. So, again, you just add in more talented players, more experience on the coaching staff as a unit, and you add in maybe a little bit easier schedule as far as some of the defenses that you're going to face. And this is why Florida State should be able to have, you know, borderline elite offense in 2023. As long as they can stay healthy, as long as they can cut out a lot of the small mistakes that we saw last year, costly penalties, dropped passes, which is pretty much what lost them the NC State game. If you can be efficient and stay healthy in this offense, there's no reason Florida State can't have one of the top three, if not the best offense in the country. And like we mentioned before, as long as their defense can be good enough, and I feel like the only question right now is the safety position, but to me, they've upgraded at every other position on the defense. So it should translate into not only a more complementary football. You should have a better defense this year as well as an elite offense. And, you know, if you want to win the conference, if you want to play for the national championship, that's where you need to be. And I'm excited to watch it. So with that being said, guys, that's pretty much about it. I just wanted to kind of talk about some of the things that they added this year and why Florida State's offense can be exciting and why it should be exciting and why it should be one of the, if not the best offenses in the country when you look at all the weapons that they have. I mean, this is the most talented, you know, Florida State's roster has been in some time, especially on the offensive side of the ball. You have some real, legit, proven Power 5 guys who are coming in ready to contribute day one. And like I said, when you look at what they could average if they just did the same thing they did last year and added the production that the other players got, this is, like I said, assuming they don't get any better and you just get the production that you got in the past, then you have the potential, like we said, when you look at the added production, you could be the number one offense. You could have been tied for third in points per game with Southern Cal. And so that's going to get you where you want to go as long as you eliminate the mistakes, as long as they can get the kicking situation taken care of, as long as the defense can show up and you come ready to play on Saturday. There's no defense that Florida State's offense should be scared of. And if they can average 40 to 41 or 2 points per game, that's as good as everybody who made the playoffs last year. So that is a recipe for success. And like I said, I'm excited to watch it. So with that being said, guys, I think we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. It's just going to be kind of a quick episode for you. Just wanted to talk about this offense a little bit. And again, wish the softball team good luck. They're getting ready to start the series against Oklahoma for the national championship. So hopefully they can bring that home. And so we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. As always, I appreciate you guys' support. Thanks for listening, and go Noles.